So it was that kind of atmosphere that was around for several years. And then Hefner, Hugh Hefner, came along. He was starting a new magazine.
Yep.
He had $400. He could buy my novel and put it in the second, third, and fourth issues of Playboy, which he did when no one else would touch it because they're afraid of the subject matter, burning books, censorship, and what have you.
Fahrenheit 451 is the temperature at which paper burns, is it?
That's correct.
Yeah.
It took me a while to find out the exact temperature. I called the chemistry department at UCLA. They didn't know. I called the physics department at SC. They didn't know. I said, wait a minute, call the fire department. So I called the fire department, and the fire chief came on, and I said, what's the temperature of book paper catches fire? He said, just a moment. He came back. He said, 451 Fahrenheit. I said, okay, reverse it. Fahrenheit, do Fahrenheit first instead of the 451.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, very, very good. Very, very good. So what was the reaction when Hefner put this book in Playboy magazine?
Very good, actually.
I mean, did we know then that people were buying this magazine? You know how many guys today say, well, I buy Playboy not for the pictures but for what's in it. The fact that F-451 was in Playboy 40 years ago would be indicative that back even in those times, the founder of Playboy and his editorial minions wanted to put something in that magazine besides naked pictures of Marilyn Monroe.
It's been one of the best magazines in the world. They've published the work of almost every important writer. They've published the work of almost every important artist, including Picasso, and name your own artist, Matisse, and you can go back and see they've interviewed every important politician. Every important philosopher
mm-hmm.
has been in there.
Broadcaster?
That's right, yeah. So they don't get credit.
My Playboy interview damn near ended my career because I called all the executives at the network a bunch of idiots.
Well, they don't think you're really talking about them. That's
no.
The great thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Their ego protects them. And well, it's like when I worked at the studios on various films, they'd tell me they wanted a certain thing for me to write in the screenplay, and I said, oh yeah, boy, I'll do that.
Yeah.
I'd go do what I wanted to do. And then I'd come back and hand them the script and say, hey, everything's here just the way you said.
Yeah.
And if it's any good, they're going to claim it was their idea.
Uh-huh.
So their ego constantly protects them.
What was the problem people had with book burning at the time? I tend to think that people look upon book burning as a pernicious evil done, for example, by the Nazis in Germany during the 1930s, when they burned books, that they felt were not acceptable for the general population. I would think most Americans would see book burning as a real vice and would want information to be
given out. The people in charge of magazines and newspapers let themselves be spooked. And I knew some of the Hollywood Ten who had to go to jail because they refused to testify to the House Un-American Activities
mm-hmm.
Committee. And I didn't know any of them very well, but one of them came to me a year or two after this McCarthy fell from power, and I said, you handled things very poorly. He said, what do you mean? I said, you should have told the American people who you were and what you were, and say, we're not going to tell the House Un-American Activities people, but we'll tell you.
Exactly.
And then take them in
exactly.
with you, and they're going to be on your side. He says, that's right, we didn't handle it right.
That's a very good point, by the way. You can tell the people anything. It's just the HUAC, as they used to call it. And there are folks watching now who have no idea of which we speak, and it's fairly recent American history. And
well, it was a bad time. Harry Truman had to put together the Berlin airlift to save the people there from starving. Russia was misbehaving all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the confusion then of reality.
North Korea was in mobilization
that terrible mess which caused Truman to fall from the presidency. We've long since forgotten he got into trouble with his war, as Johnson got into trouble with Vietnam later on.
Let me try something on you here after the break, and then I want to get on to the role of television today and the continuing circus through which it leads the American people. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're forcing people who watch television to jump through the hoop every hour on the hour.
Oh, boy, yes.
And I think it's becoming a national distraction. I think people are just in a frenzy over what they watch on television. We'll continue with Mr. Bradbury and accept your phone calls here at 800-745-2622. Back with Ray and some of you after these messages. We are back here with Ray Bradbury, who just... can you talk about this, the conversation you had with Gorbachev?
Yeah, I had lunch with him 2 years ago in Washington, D.C. There are several other people there, like Ted Turner, of course.
Yeah.
But I had a chance.
Did Ted have a glass of wine at lunch or anything? Or
no, he was a good guy.
Okay.
Good
guy. Right. You know, Ted's been known to, you know.
That's right. Yeah. Well, Jane Fonda was there, and John Kenneth Galbraith. It was a terrific meeting.
Wow.
And I was there because Gorbachev's daughter is a big fan of mine. So I got invited by Mama and Papa. And during that afternoon, I said to Gorbachev, "What do you think of President Reagan?" He said, "Your greatest president." And I said, "Why do you say that?" He says, "Because he's the only president that said, tear down the wall." Huh? He had enough guts to face up to me. And
yeah, Nixon never said anything about it.
No, Kennedy never did, and Johnson never did. It's a shame. And it should have been said early on, as soon as it went up.
You know, what's interesting to me is how they are now rewriting Ronald Reagan's presidency in the Democratic Party as one of a period of awfulness in the United States. And what they forget is that this man won the two biggest landslides, I believe, consecutively in the history of American presidential politics. So, I mean, a lot of us must have been stupid. You know, those who voted for him, they must have been. They all got snookered. I can't believe that.
No, I'm one of the few people you'll ever talk to who bothered the first of every month there back in 83, 84, 85 to call the Bureau of Labor Statistics and find out how many new jobs had occurred during the 4 weeks before. So I've got a guy in the bureau, and I called him every month for 3 years, and I watched the employment go up by 18, 19 million jobs in that time. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm, huh? Mm-hmm.
400,000 this month, 600,000
But
next
his
month.
Critics would say, yeah, but they were all $4.35.
Well, yeah, you want them back on the streets, huh? Yeah, I always say that. And, of course, as a result, you had a whole new tax basis, and you took in more revenues than ever before in history. We're still taking them in, huh? We had a residue, an extra amount of taxes every year that came in by $8 or $9 or $10 billion. So the deficit was not caused by the rise in employment. It was caused by Congress spending the money. Everyone forgets the president doesn't spend anything. And he gets blamed for...
You better buy an ad in the trades for Ronald Reagan, Ray. Spend the $300.
Well, I'm saying it here.
By the way, you know what I thought was great yesterday was when Clinton called the guy at American Airlines and the gal at the flight attendant says, "Hey, come on, let's get the people are suffering. Let's get this thing back on the bargain."
Right.
I think that's what the president is supposed to do. The bully pulpit.
Yeah, this is the first time I've been sort of happy about him because, well, let's go back to TV for a moment.
Yeah, okay.
And the responsibility of television to the American people. Back 2.5 years ago, I was watching a local station, and on this local TV news, they said a recession is coming. Huh? It's not here yet, but it's coming.
It's coming.
And I turned to my wife, and I said, "Watch and bring it on." Now. And sure enough, every night for 1,000 nights, every local TV station and the national stations repeated the lie, huh? And it became the truth. There's no reason for this recession, but we talked ourselves into it. It's part of a pattern. Remember, I can name 5 or 6 items. A few years ago, the poison grapes from South America, we destroyed part of the grape industry. That was all TV.
They found 2 tainted grapes.
That's right.
On a wharf in Philadelphia. 2 grapes from Chile were tainted, and they almost ruined the fruit industry in this
That's
country,
right.
the television
well,
business.
Then LR and the apples, the poisoned apples.
Yep.
I think Meryl Streep told us about those.
How about this one? There are no more trees left in the woods. The ozone layer is so bad we're going to destroy the planet.
The radon in your cellar?
Yep.
And if you don't have it, we'll bring it over and put it
in? Yep. And how about this one, that if you get up in the morning out of bed, the stress is greater than sex, so your risk of a heart attack is greater. And I mean, they've got people scared 8 ways till Sunday.
Well, it's panic. It's panic per week.
But how about our commercials? Flu season's coming. Better get some Listerine or Coraceptic. Or I'm not picking on Listerine here. But every year, flu season's coming, and you're going to get it.
Well, and then we destroyed the nuclear industry 10 years ago with the Three Mile Island disaster. There was no disaster. That word was there, though. And so we pulled back from the nuclear industry, which we should have. Because it doesn't pollute, huh?
What about Linda? what about Lorena Bobbitt and cutting off her husband's tallywhacker? And what about Michael Jackson, whether or not he molested a kid? And what about NAFTA in the headlines and on television for 8 days? And we don't even get to vote on this, Ray. This is not our election. What's going on here with this constant circus paraded before the American
people? Yeah, well, we believe in trials without juries, without judges, without the prosecution, without the defense, without the witnesses. And we've seen it again with the senator from Oregon during the
Packwood,
last...
Packwood, this man's been crucified.
Well, I wrote him a love letter 2 weeks ago. I said, stand firm, these are all idiots. And don't believe, don't give up, because you've got to have a trial. You've got to go to court. You got to get these people.
And by the way, for whatever he is accused of, does he not have a right to privacy in his personal life?
Yes, and he's a very nice man. I know him. I've been to his office. I've had lunch with him. And all this happened 20 years ago. And the fact that it's being dredged up now is, let these women come forward, huh? Let's see who they are.
And how about the kid that 10 years after the fact takes on the Cardinal of Chicago?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what's going on in this country today?
Make him give back the car. If he had one, too. How about the parents of this boy that Michael Jackson supposedly had something to do with? Didn't they suspect when he brought home an $80,000 car something might be going on?
Yeah. Unusual.
Gee, we're getting on well here tonight, aren't we?
We always do, Ray. Let's get on here with Gary in North Carolina. Hello.
How are you doing tonight, Tom?
Okay, Gary, say hi to Ray.
Bradbury.
Hi there.
Nice to see you. I've been a fan of science fiction for the last, I guess, 30-some years myself, so Fahrenheit 451 is a little bit older than I am, but I have a question. It sort of has to do with what you were just talking about.
Gary, great. I'll tell you, my friend, I got a commercial in the gate here. Can you just stay right there on the toll-free, okay?
Sure will.
All right, don't move. Back with Gary in North Carolina, more of you on the toll-free line, with Ray Bradbury, whose book, whose novel, classic Fahrenheit 451, is now commemorating its 40th anniversary with a special edition available in the bookstores. We will continue with Ray. Robert Culp is just around the corner, and we'll be right back from Burbank and Studio A after these messages. Thanks for watching, everybody. Okay, Gary, go ahead with your conversation here with Ray Bradbury.
Thank you. It's a multi-level question, comment, observation, I suppose. You were just remarking about the television's role in today's world, and I'm wondering, has readership of books declined in all areas, but especially science fiction? And also, what is your opinion about the more modernistic, dehumanizing, cyberpunk type of science fiction that seems to be more prevalent now than the socially conscious science fiction of your era and then Heinlein and the others of the field?
Well, first of all, there are more science fiction books out today than ever before in history. 40 years ago, there were 8 or 9 books a year being published, and now there are 500. So there's plenty to choose from. You don't have to read the cyberpunk. I haven't read any, so I can't comment on it. But we've had a revolution in the schools. For the first time in the history of the world, teachers are being taught by the students, because the students bring science fiction novels into the class and say, teacher, try this. Here's Heinlein, here's Asimov, here's Bradbury. And the teacher says, oh, come on, you know, science fiction.
No, teach, read this. You're going to like this.
And then they say, hey, it's okay.
Something going on there.
So now there are courses in science fiction in almost every high school and junior high and college in the United States and all over the world, in France, Sweden, what have you.
Do you read the others that you just mentioned?
I did when I was younger.
Yeah, but do you read?
They were my friends and teachers.
Do you read your competition now?
No, I don't have time. Oh. And I don't want to read my competition because I might inadvertently imitate them.
Yeah, right.
It's incestuous, huh? So you should go your own way. I write my particular kind of thing, which no one else writes. I write plays, which nobody else writes. I write poetry. There are very few science fiction writers who do that. And I write essays. So I've had a lot of fun in various fields with these people. And I write television on occasion. I've had my own
series. Do you write on a typewriter or a word processing screen?
I can out-type anyone on my IBM Selectric wheel writer.
With two fingers, huh?
No. I learned to touch type.
No, I didn't. I'll bet I can outdo you with two fingers.
Okay.
Oh, I'm fast.
All right.
I said one day I was somewhere and somebody was saying he couldn't figure out this thing where you put the word processor up on the screen. I said, you know, they've got a new invention now. I said, this is truly an amazing piece of equipment. You put the piece of paper in, and it prints it right on the piece of paper. You don't have to put it in the printer. He said, God, what does it call? I said, typewriter.
That's right. No, I love my wheel writer. And I then turn over my manuscript to my daughter, who lives in Phoenix. I send it by fax, and she puts it in her computer and sends me back a corrected copy. So, no, I first of all, I love the chunking sound of typing.
So do I.
I don't like the touch on a computer. I don't like the screens. I'm accustomed to paper. So.
Yeah, paper's fine.
I have a lot of fun.
And if you want a copy, they have this thing called Carbon, where if you put it, it'll make two copies at the same time for you. It's amazing what they can do.
And also, a wheel writer, you press a button, and it makes a second copy, types it out for you.
There you go.
Yeah.
Here's Beth in Tracy, California. Hello.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Fine. Beth, how are you?
Oh, I'm just terrific.
Good. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Oh, the best to you, too.
Thanks.
Couple questions.
Sure.
I wanted to tell Mr. Bradbury that I think he's a national treasure. And I work with gifted children, and your book, Fahrenheit 451, is one of the top 10 books I recommend, almost as a mandatory read. And the last gentleman who called in, I have an answer for his question about whether readership has gone down in this country. It's really interesting that in the last 10 years, the attempts to ban books keep going up. As readership, the number of functional illiterates in this country also seem to be going up. And if I could recommend to people listening one gift to get somebody for Christmas, it would be a book.
Absolutely.
Start a whole new trend. And I just wanted Mr. Bradbury to know that in the last 10 years, it seems like in 1980, I went to one library commission meeting in Alameda County in Oakland to stand up against some people who wanted to ban certain books. And it seems like every month I'm going now.
Good for you.
And I was hoping that he could kind of give his opinions on this. And I also wanted to tell you, Tom, I really enjoyed your show last night on turkeys.
Oh, thanks.
And it was so funny because I've never heard of oyster dressing last night.
Right.
And I said to my husband, I said, you take them out of the shell first before.
Yeah, you do.
So I wanted to tell you that. And the same thing with chestnuts. Do you take them out of the shell or do you leave them in?
No. What you do, Beth, is you just tilt the little suckers and they slide right into the dressing.
My husband said, the way you cook, please don't change.
All right, listen, hold on here. Let me have Ray speak about people who ban books in this country.
Oh, it isn't, again, there's the old panic thinking here. I get mail all the time. It's temporary.
Yeah.
There's a person here or there, a city father, a teacher, a mother, and they want me to come help. I said, no, I won't do that. I won't dignify these toads and turn them into frogs. So you handle it there. And when they leave the library, you put the book back on the shelf. And they come back 2 weeks later and they say, hey, what's that book doing on the shelf? Gee, I don't know how to get there. And they take it off again.
Yeah.
And when they're gone, you put it back
up.
And
yeah.
After a while, they blow away in the wind. There's no real threat here.
Beth, I'm glad you called. Thanks.
Here bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Bob in Nebraska for Ray Bradbury. Hello.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
This good, good,
thanks.
First
time I've ever tried to call, and I got through. I'm amazed.
I'm flattered. Thanks, and say hi to Ray.
Hi, Ray.
Hi there.
You're one of my favorite authors.
Thank you.
I would like to ask you, I was really impressed by Rod Steiger's portrayal of the Illustrated Man in an old movie. Perhaps you've seen it.
A few times.
I wanted to know which of the video reproductions of your writing you thought was the best.
Oh, the best luck I've had is with my own series during the last 6 years.
On USA Cable.
Oh, that's correct. And we did 65 shows over a period of 6 or 7 years in New Zealand, in Canada, and Paris, and in London. And out of that 65 shows, only 3 clinkers. That's darn good. And we had people like Peter O'Toole.
What defines a clinker out of the 65?
A show that just doesn't work from the very first frame.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And you sit there and you think, what can we do to save it?
Mm-hmm. Junk it.
Yeah, and if you could, you would. So I try to warn people about the 3 that didn't work. But the rest, we got a lot of awards, got a lot of nominations. I had a wonderful producer, Tom Cotter, working with me. I did all the scripts to guarantee the quality, because it had to be someone like myself handling my own stories. So I've had a good experience in television, and I'm now retired from the series, and I probably won't do anything like it for a long time.
Good.
Yeah.
I don't need the competition.
That's right.
Bob, I'm glad you called. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Ray, it's always a pleasure. Happy holidays to you and yours, my friend. Happy Thanksgiving, Ray.
Thank you so much.
Nice of you to come over.
Pleasure.
My pleasure. Our pleasure. Ray Bradbury, Fahrenheit 451, now in the 40th anniversary edition. We'll continue from Fort Lee Robert Culp is here tonight from Burbank. We'll be right. What did I say? Fort Lee? I'm already on the cooking sherry. Now these messages.